An obstacle gives me a chance to show my genius in yet another way. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. An obstacle gives me a chance to show my genius in yet another way. Most people, when they are faced with obstacles, they have one thing to say. Why me, oh God? Why does this have to happen to me? Why does this have to happen to me my boy came along and wanted to do his laundry, and he threw it in the washing machine and turned it on high and hot and cleaned up his stuff, and my underpants and my underclothes were underneath there, and they all turned blue and every other color that came off the Levi's and everything else. But things like that happen to us because we don't demonstrate what we sort of subconsciously believe. Now, we subconsciously believe that we are number one. That's a nice thing to believe, Tim. We believe that we're number one. We believe that we are the only one, and that we create everything in our world the way we like it or whatever. And then we create other people in our world thinking that they're number one, thinking that they can do anything they want to do, anytime they want to do it, any way they want to do it. And it runs in conflict with what we think we want to do, anytime we want to do it, any way we want to do it. You see, the big thing about obstacles are that we create them as little proofs of how consistent we are in our belief. Now, if that little scenario, the clothing, is true, and you know it is true, why were your undershorts, your underwear, your underclothing in the washing machine and nothing else, so to speak? Because you thought you were number one, and you used the washing machine as a hamper. And so you thought when you got enough dirty clothes in there, you'd wash it, you know. And all of your clothes are white and pretty and nice, you know. And you were going to wash it on medium heat, and you were going to take care of it in the perfect way. And you didn't count on other parts of your creation coming in and not looking to see if there's anything in there first, just throwing their things in. So, what does a good teacher do? We had rented a motorhome one time, and we took the whole family up to Mount Shasta. And we had some 12 people, wasn't it, something like that? We had about 12, 16 people in there. We had a full house. And on the way up there, we had different people loading the motorhome and loading the basement that's underneath the main part of the house. And we just presumed that everybody was going to close the door that they opened. They were going to lock the door. If they unlocked it, they would lock it again. We just presumed that, you know. And, of course, that's not a good presumption. And the reason I say it's not a good presumption is, do you do that? Do you always close what you open? Do you always lock what you unlock? Do you do that? And if the answer is you don't do that every time, then how could you expect your creation to do that? Because your creation is a perfect reflection of you. So, as we're driving along, somebody hollered, "Hey, our slides are going out from underneath there." We're going up to the mountain in the snow. And our sleds and our toboggans and all shooting out the side of the road. And we stopped, and for miles back, we picked up all of our goodies, and we put them in underneath the motorhome, and we securely locked each cabinet. And then, as a testing part of all of this, we went to a restaurant. And as we went into this restaurant in the Magic Kingdom, not the Magic Kingdom, it was the Magic Mountain. We were in the parking lot there, and I took Ellen, who was the president, and I said, "Ellen, come with me." And she came outside, and I said, "I want you to open every cabinet underneath here, and then I want you to close every cabinet and just show me what you do. So she opened the cabinet, and in opening it, she closed it, but she didn't lock it. And I said, we must always lock every cabinet, because that's just what we do. Do we lock our car when we leave it? Well, then we lock the cabinets too, you know. And I said, it also makes for a more secure hold on the lock. It won't jiggle open. I don't need to say that, because I'm just creating her doing it right. It's all Ellen's fault. I mean, everything that goes on in the world is Ellen's fault, because she's number one. So Ellen says, well, thank you for showing me. And I said, okay, Ellen, now you bring every one of the other people out here, one at a time. Go around the entire motorhome. Have them open each cabinet and close each cabinet and lock each cabinet and see how it should be done. So an hour or so later, Ellen had taken everybody out, walked around the cabinet. Ellen will never forget to lock those doors. And I think most of the other people won't forget it either. But what she was doing, she was creating people in her world knowing what the rules are. Now, you see, having rules is not enough. It's applying rules that make the big difference. We have house rules here, which every house has or should have, and they begin. If you open it, close it. If you unlock it, lock it. Okay. So I said, Ellen, that's our house. Oh, yeah. Well, that applies to everything. Yeah, I see that. And so when she got done with everybody, they were all laughing and smiling and doing the thing, and they were thinking it's a big joke, you know. I'm sure that for the rest of their life, they will never forget that road stop, the time that it took to go around and everybody go out and lock and unlock and do these things and learn how to do it right. It was quite impressive. Now, if you, as a mother, have a child, and you tell the child, do your own laundry now and then, that's a good enough word. That's good. But if you, as a mother, are not astute, you will say, hey, we'll do it just like I do it. And he's never seen you do it. You've always been doing it when he wasn't home or something like that. So if you are, as a mother, are an astute mother, you'll take him out there and you'll say, son, where are your white undershorts and your white undershirt? And so he'll bring it to you and you throw it in there. And then you say, okay, now, where is that red dress I was wearing, you know, the shop dress? And he said, here it is, puts it in there. Okay, now, where is that blue apron that I've been wearing, you know, out in the garden and so forth, you know? Oh, here it is. Throw it in there. And so you say, now, here's how you do the washing. And you turn on the machine to hot. And you put soap in there and maybe bleach in there, too, you know. And so, because, you know, kids always like to put bleach in things. So you let it wash, and you show them how it works, and show them. Then you bring it out, and you hold it up and say, aren't these beautiful undershorts that you're going to wear? When you go to gym class, your shorts will be pink. My, won't the boys get a kick out of that? And so this was before the days when it's fashion. Nowadays, anything goes as fashion. And so he would learn a lesson. And then she would say to him, you know, we really should have looked in there and thought, what we're mixing. The colored stuff should go here and the white should go here and stuff like that. And then go through it once or twice with them. And your mother went through it with you several times. But here you think that boys are so obviously superior to any girl that ever walked that you don't have to tell them. They just know by osmosis all the things your mother taught you by the rod. Pay attention, girl. Listen, you know. And girls do have to have lessons, don't they? You don't think so?
Yes.
All right. So, you see, an obstacle gives me a chance to show my genius in yet another way. You say, well, now what does this have to do with all that? Well, what this has to do with all that is that if I'm the creator of my world and I am creating obstacles in my world, why am I creating these obstacles in my world? Am I not a good creator? And the answer is yes, you're not a good creator. Why? I said that it's done and it's done right. Yes, but have you paved that road to having it done right with having it done right? Have you taught all of your family, who are your creation, how to use your washer and your dryer? Have you taught them how to cook their meals under medium heat and always have a perfect meal? Have you done that? Have you taken the time, and it takes time, have you taken the time to be a parent, to be a teacher, to be a sharer, to be a creator? You see, the Bible has a lot of fun. I mean, here this stupid God creates Adam and Eve, who cheated and ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I mean, to have two such recalcitrant children by God, the allness of all, who should have no problem at all in having the very best, you know? Well, you see, Adam and Eve had no problems, but they had a tempter there who came along and said, hey, these apples are real good. You should try them. You know, they're really fine. You'll really like them, you know? And if you're brought up that you follow the rules, you would never eat the apple. And then what happens with Adam and Eve's kids? I mean, this is God's grandchildren, you know? God's grandchildren going around murdering each other, you know? And jealous of each other and stuff. Wow, I mean, what a way to start the story of creation. Mm. I mean, what chance does humanity have if that is our foundation of creation? Now, you say, well, Herb, I never thought of the Bible quite like that. But hell, that's what it is. Did God create Adam and Eve? You bet he did. Did God create his grandchildren? Let Adam and Eve do it? Yeah. That's the kind of God that is irascible and undependable. I think the Bible is the story of the religious development of people trying to get people to stay in line and do things. And we all know that there is no humanness to God, mm-hmm. You know, even though God can be a loving presence, but there's no humanness. And all of these things that we want to allude to God, that he created Adam and Eve out of his thought or out of the clay or whatever story we want to have, hey, that's cool. But you see, that's not taking responsibility. When you take responsibility, what should Adam and Eve have taught their children? Leave the knowledge of tree of knowledge of good and evil alone. And do you think that Adam and Eve's friends wanted to leave the tree alone, or do you think they were ready to climb up that apple tree too? Mm-hmm. Oh, you bet they were. Now, where did these friends come from?
Mm, good question.
Yeah, because if Adam and Eve were the first grandchildren on earth, and that is the first children on earth, and Cain and Abel were the first grandchildren, where'd their friends come from? But anyhow, that's the illogic of life. We are always faced with a lot of illogical things, and we sort of base our entire life on them. I mean, can you imagine how long biblical stories have done this? And can you imagine how long people who live on Polynesian islands with volcanoes have used the volcano as a god? And what a terrible god that was, come steaming down the mountain and say, I'm going to pick out a few here. or give me your virgins, you know, and throw them in the volcano. Some demented mind thought up those things, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Some really demented mind. And those are obstacles that give me a chance to show my genius. Now, if I were a parent and I had a young virgin, I wouldn't stay on that island. I would do my best to be somewhere else. Or I'd have my daughter marry young, very young, so she would never have to be offered to the volcanic god. You see, The obstacles that come to us allow us to use our genius. They allow us to use our genius. Now, if you are God and you created the world and you created everything, why would you create a tree of the knowledge of good and evil as a tempting thing for people? You know, why would you go out and then why would you say it? I mean, there's enough trees in the Garden of Eden for Adam and Eve to eat a lifetime without ever getting to the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you know. And if the tree of knowledge of good and evil was something that was not beneficial to man, or his consciousness was not attuned to the point where he could be master over it, which he could never be master over it, God could have made the tree invisible, you know. Nobody saw it. I mean, to me, if I were writing the story of the Bible and I was having that scenario, I'd be a loving God, real loving God. And I would take that tree, which is an illusion in any event, it's an illusion, I'd take that tree and have it be invisible. Because really, when you stop and think about it, how many things like the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that you're not supposed to do are there in the world today? And there's billions. And are you tempted by all of them? No, you have your specials. You have your special temptations. And those are called obstacles too. And those obstacles slow you down on your path. And when you are able to say, I am the pure white light of love, and my path is open before me. You see, then there are no obstacles. Now, we saw this show with the Bush people, and the young man who was the scientist there was made to look what's his name last night?
Danny Kaye.
Like Danny Kaye, sort of a goofball, you know. And it was not necessary. It was not necessary. It was pleasant comedy relief, but the show was not that dynamic that needed that comedy relief. And it made him sort of a goofball with women. It made him a goofball with anything where he was dealing with people. But when he dealt with his job, he knew it very well. And then when he was driving his truck, he was driving it just as silly as the Bush person drove it. And how did he stop it at the very end? Well, if that was the case, why didn't he stop it sooner? But he had to make himself look like a fool. And you see, the writers sometimes go crazy in making a person look foolish. They if a little bit is good, a lot is better.
Yeah,
and the same is true with medicine. You know, if a little bit is good, a lot is better. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. That can be very destructive and very, very hurtful.
Overkill.
Truly, yeah. So an obstacle gives me a chance to show my genius in yet another way. Stop and think now. What obstacles have come your way just today? And what obstacles have come your way that have overwhelmed you, made you cry, made you sad, made you glad, made you happy, made you feel wow? Or what? Like the obstacle could well have been you're coming up to breakfast and the sun pops over the horizon and it's so beautiful. It has a halo of clouds that gather about it. And it has all sorts of lovely things about it. You have to stop. Now you're going to be late for breakfast, but you have to stop. That obstacle comes in front of you. Wow. Well, the obstacle deserved your attention. However, did you promise to be at breakfast at a certain time? That deserved your attention too. Now, is that sun going to be there another day? Every day. Is your breakfast going to be there every day? Probably. So you see, we now learn two things. Don't make promises to be at breakfast at a certain time. And when a beautiful cloud comes along, the sun comes along, popping up out of the horizon, enjoy it. Ellen, why?
Live in the now. Oh.
That's right. Thank you, Ellen. We want to live in the now.
Well, both is living in the now.
What?
Present. The breakfast.
Well, the thing is, live in the now. When you are walking down the street and you see an accident, you stop and enjoy it, you know, and you see all the misery going on there.
But I'm not sure that that is not the right thing to do, because if I promise to be at breakfast because it's part of the game, I'm
you
at breakfast.
Will always be in time for breakfast, even if you look at it, because your inner self knows exactly that it's going to see that sun and you leave 2-3 minutes earlier.
Then that would not be in discussion.
No.
In discussion was to be
living
in time.
Hour. No.
To be
in
time at breakfast, or to enjoy.
You mean
the
to follow your promise, or to enjoy the diversion that comes your way?
Yeah. Well, if
it's a diversion. It's the test of the diversion.
Sure, the diversion is a test. Okay, you're coming to breakfast. And as usual, you have made the timing so that you arrive here exactly 5 minutes before, so you can sit down and meditate. Mm-hmm. And so, as you're coming up here, you're walking along, and here is a whole line of alligators walking across the road. And you say, well, for goodness sakes, isn't that something? Out of the way, boys, I'm on my way to breakfast, and I can't be late. And the alligators look at you and say, lady, put it up your nose. We're walking here. We have the right of way. Now, if Ellen were the creator of her world, in the first place, she wouldn't create alligators here, but if Ellen were the creator of her world, and she came upon something that was kind of different, like alligators walking across the road, she would just stop and say, I am the master here.
Exactly.
This is an illusion. You're not there. And then she'd walk right straight through, and they wouldn't be there for her.
Right.
If you're the master.
Yes.
If you choose, alligator, what am I going to do? Am I going to say? If you're going to be let the event or the obstacle scare the heck out of you, then you're not in charge.
That's right.
But the moment you decide, hey, I'm the master here, and you don't have to close your eyes, and you just say, you're gone. You're an illusion. You're not there. And everything's an illusion. So you're not saying something wrong. But do you have the courage and the strength and the will? Or do you have the choice to be diverted? Alligators walking across my path here in Southern California. My goodness, they must have got loose from some zoo or something. Or, you know. Yeah, the zoo of your mind. Or a boa constrictor going across the path.
Alligator or sun or boa constrictor, it's the same thing. It's a distraction, it's a test to see if I can follow up what I have promised to be
and
in time.
Can you, no, not that you're going to be in time, but this is an obstacle. You see, if you think of it as something to keep you from being on time, then you're going to not be on time.
Then it's an obstacle.
Then, but if you will look at it and say, hey, that's an interesting diversion. Something to divert my attention for a moment. And if you want, it can divert your attention for a lot of moments. And if you want, it can divert your attention for a lot of moments, and you can still be to breakfast on time.
That's right.
It all depends. And I'm saying breakfast on time because big deal, you know. I mean, there's a lot more important things than breakfast on time.
No, that's not true. But if you say, I am in time for breakfast, you are in time for breakfast regardless.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's the same thing like saying to the alligator, be gone.
You don't say to the alligator, be gone. You don't say. You just say, you're an illusion. You don't say, you're be gone.
My path is free.
The illusion can be there or not there.
Yeah, whatever.
But if you say be gone, you have given it existence.
I mean, you speak your word.
That you're master. You're master of this illusion. Yeah.
Because time is an illusion too.
That's right. Everything's an illusion. So you think that time is an illusion, huh? That's another story. But an obstacle gives me a chance to show my genius in yet another way. Sometimes the obstacle is part of my genius, too, like the alligators. But this is wonderful. It's wonderful. We want to always realize that we have a genius within us that we have never even touched. We have a magic within us, a magical being within us, ourselves, which we have never touched. And I'll throw this in just as a little side. Never, never, never fear, fear. Never make promises, because promises are made to be broken. Promises are not made to be upheld. You say, well, Herb, that's a new one. No, it isn't. Promises are made to somebody outside of yourself. And if you make a promise to yourself that you will do something, you have the total opportunity or permission, you have the total permission to change the promise right while you're in the situation. You can say, breakfast will be ready for me when I get there. And so then you get there, delayed 10, 15 minutes or whatever. And when you arrive at the door, everybody is on the telephone talking to Gertrude over in Switzerland, and breakfast hasn't even begun. And Sylvia, who was working on preparing something, and Ingeborg, who's doing this, and Ellen, who's doing that, everybody stopped. And we're talking to Gertrude on the phone because she was telling them how she had walked along the street and there's a bunch of alligators going across the road. And it was just almost unbelievable, you know. And so you hadn't even thought of breakfast. And then I come walking in the door and I say, hey, where's breakfast? Oh, listen to this, what Gertrude had. And it's wonderful, you know. It's wonderful. But these things only happen to geniuses. They only happen to masters. They only happen to God, and you're God. And so when you recognize that, then you don't look at it as a negative thing. You look at it as just a diversion over which you are the master. So have a lovely day, and know that I am with you always in all ways. I love you. I love you. I love you.